Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, the 15th of March, 2018. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, phone numbers, whatever it takes so that you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. The Cascadia Forest Defenders invites you to a week-long climbing camp. Come spend time in the woods learning how to ascend and descend a static rope, traverse between trees, use a crossbow for tree entry, build and set a platform in a tree, build road blockades involving aerial structures, and much more. It's going to take place March 26th through April 1st. You need to RSVP to find out where and to let them know you're coming. The email address is forestdefensenow@gmail.com. forestdefensenow@gmail.com. For more information, go to their webpage, www.forestdefensenow.com. And West Virginia tree sit continues amid a snowstorm and approaching tree felling. It's evening now, and we're still here monitoring the climb lines that anchor our platforms and connect the trees and trying to keep the snow from blowing into the tree sits. This morning we could look down the mountain into unbroken snow-covered forest, where now we see an expanse of felled trunks. The clearing crew cut up the easement through private land on the West Virginia side of Peters Mountain and into the National Forest, working in the area around the sits from the morning and into early afternoon. Thankfully, friends on the ground helped to make sure workers understood the rigging is anchored to the trees and platforms, so no one cut trees attached to our lines or trees that would have hit those lines as they fell. This has left a significant piece of the easement in the National Forest with trees still standing, including where MVP plans to bore under the Appalachian Trail. We intend to stay here as long as the trees do. The progress MVP has already made is painful to see, and the roars of the chainsaw still ring in our ears. Yet the company would do this, send out a chainsaw crew in a snowstorm to cut a gash up this beautiful wild mountain, plant a dura through delicate karst terrain without regard for water or life, continue to ignore and attempt to trample on everyone in Virginia and West Virginia who live on land they do not want this pipeline to destroy, only strengthens our resolve. We've received so much support from the start of this action, from people sharing what's happening across social media to folks who live nearby who brave the winter weather to bring hand warmers, food, and reading materials to us. We will continue against the pipeline, against the forces of the state that support the pipeline companies, and continue to uphold the colonization and exploitation that MVP, ACP, and all pipelines are part of, alongside the myriad struggles against pipelines and extraction everywhere in defense of the land and waters we love. And Honduran police have arrested an executive for helping to plan the murder of Berta Cáceres. In this story by Natalie Gallon, Nicole Chavez, and Jackie Castillo of CNN, as found in the Earth First Newswire, a hydroelectric executive was arrested on Friday and accused of helping to plan the murder of a Honduran environmental activist, Berta Cáceres, 2 years ago, the country's prosecutors said. Robert David Castillo Mejia, executive president of Desarrollo Energéticos Sociedad Anónima, was detained Friday at the Ramon Vieda Morales International Airport in the Honduran capital as he was trying to flee the country, the Honduran Attorney General's office said on Twitter. He is accused of providing logistics and other resources to one of the perpetrators of the murder, the Attorney General's office said in a statement. In an email to CNN, DESA called the detention unjust, adding that Castillo and all members of DESA are totally disconnected to any acts of violence, and the company rejects this decision, which was based on international pressure and smear campaigns against the company conducted by NGOs, the statement said. The company has long denied any connection to the murder. Castillo is the ninth suspect arrested in the activist's death. The other suspects include two former DESA employees, a former Honduran military sergeant, and a former major in the country's armed forces. Castillo also served in the Honduran military as a second lieutenant in the military intelligence unit. All nine are currently behind bars. Caceres was fatally shot in her home on western Honduras on March 2, 2016. Just a year earlier, she had won the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize for her grassroots campaign against the construction of a dam on the river sacred to the indigenous Lenca people. The dam was a joint project between DESA and a state-owned Chinese company. The Goldman Prize's website says construction on the dam project has now effectively stopped. From the Save Matol's Ancient Forest Facebook page, we read that Cal Fire's decision on Humboldt Redwood Company's ruinous road-building proposal in the Matol River's headwaters was once again been postponed, this time at the request of Humboldt Redwood Company's own forester. Cal Fire says the new date of decision will be March 30th unless HRC extends the deadline again. Very strange behavior indeed. Thanks to everybody who sent in comments on the plan. They don't seem to know what to do. And that's Save Matol's Ancient Forest on Facebook.com. And Hunger guides mountain lions' actions to enter residential areas in this report from Colorado State University. In late February, CBS News Denver reported that mountain lion sightings were on the rise in Colorado's high country. Lion attacks on people in the state and around the world are rare, but the story referenced an attack on a 5-year-old boy in 2016 by a mountain lion near Aspen. Wildlife biologists around the world studying these big cats have had difficulty explaining why these attacks occur, even after tracking the predators with GPS collars. A study from Colorado State University and Colorado Parks and Wildlife provides new insight. Researchers found that while the animals are generally fearful and avoid humans, hunger can dampen that fear. The study, Hunger Mediates Apex Predators' Risk Avoidance Response in Wildland-Urban Interface, was recently published online in the Journal of Animal Ecology. These predators, including mountain lions, aren't angry and seeking out backyards to find food, but there comes a point when a mountain lion is hungry enough that it may use backyards to hunt for food, similar to what takes place in the wild, said Kevin Blecha, who worked on the research in conjunction with Colorado Parks and Wildlife biologists while pursuing a graduate degree in ecology from CSU. Previous studies have shown that big cat predators intentionally avoid people due to fear. Other research has found that predators prefer to spend their time in prey-rich areas. Unfortunately, these two explanations are not lining up in explaining large predator movements in backyards and even contradict one another, especially where they could actually be more prey like deer available near people's homes, said Butcha. And from Sacramento Bee, we read that man accused in California's largest raptor poaching case left hawk carcasses to rot. And this story written by Ryan Sabalo and Ben J. Eagle, as found in the Sacramento Bee. They found them dead lying in piles around the base of telephone poles and trees, dozens and dozens of dead hawks and other birds blasted from their perches. Game wardens say they discovered the grisly scene, the site of the largest raptor poaching case in state history, after getting an anonymous tip that a 67-year-old Lassen County man shot a hawk with a rifle on his property. Wardens arrested Richard Parker on Monday near the high desert town of Standish, a few miles from California's northeastern border with Nevada. They still say they don't know why he went on this killing spree, shooting bird after bird with his rifle, then leaving their carcasses to rot. "We really don't have an answer," said Captain Patrick Foy of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. "It's pretty staggering in its numbers, and that's certainly the question that everyone is asking." Parker, who has since been released from the Lassen County Jail, couldn't be reached for comment. After receiving the anonymous tip, Warden Tim Kinnard visited Parker's 80-acre property. As he walked over to knock on the door, he spotted two dead hawks in the tree and seven more around its base, Foy said. A team of wardens returned on Monday with a warrant. By the time their search was concluded, they found 126 dead birds of prey in various stages of decay, Foy said. Most were red-tailed hawks, though there was at least one owl and a ferruginous hawk, which is rarely seen in Northern California. Foy said investigators also found two dead bobcats that had been shot and left to rot on Parker's property. Inside his home, investigators discovered a stuffed mountain lion and several non-game birds, Foy said. It has been illegal to kill mountain lions or possess their parts since 1991 when California's approved Proposition 117, which banned mountain lion hunting statewide. Parker was booked on suspicion of a slew of wildlife charges, including the taking of birds of prey, taking non-game birds protected by the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act, taking other non-game birds, and possession of unlawfully taken wildlife. If convicted, Parker faces up to 6 months in jail and a $5,000 fine for each dead raptor and a $10,000 fine for the cougar. Chief David Bess, who oversees the state's wildlife officers, said the case shows why it's so important for citizens to keep calling in tips to the state's Cal Tip poaching line. And here's your update from the field, from the Buffalo Field Campaign. The three brave souls with the collective Wild Buffalo Defense, who took direct action in an attempt to halt Yellowstone National Park from facilitating buffalo slaughter operations, were released from jail on Monday after being incarcerated for 6 full days on misdemeanor charges. All three are doing well. Along with Buffalo Field Campaign and Wild Buffalo Defense, there has been a strong showing of solidarity from people, including locals and park visitors, who attended Monday's hearing at Yellowstone's Justice Center. Support for their deeds is pouring in from everywhere, except, of course, from Yellowstone Rangers and the U.S. federal court. Two of the protectors, Cody and Tom, were charged with violating Yellowstone's extensive closure surrounding the Stevens Creek buffalo trap and also with interfering with an agency function. That function was the slaughter of the country's last wild buffalo, the United States national mammal. The third protector, Hannah, was charged with violating the same closure. She had been attempting to observe and document the actions of law enforcement exercising her constitutional rights. The federal judge presiding over the case, Mark Carman, just could not understand why such passionate people would take such an action when, as he put it, Yellowstone is doing such a great job protecting the wild buffalo who are in their care. In a condescending tone, he gave three protectors a verbal spanking about needing to be part of the system and recognizing how the system works. Yeah, by next week, the Buffalo Protectors will be sharing statements with you about the reasons they took these important actions, and please consider contributing to the Protectors' Legal Defense Fund. Yellowstone National Park has publicly stated they have captured 750 of the country's last wild migratory buffalo, a sacred keystone species, and our national mammal. The fact that Yellowstone would object to people trying to protect the buffalo, actions Yellowstone should be itself taking, just shows how tragically inculcated into Montana's livestock industry's culture the park has drowned. Please consider giving Yellowstone National Park Superintendent Dan Wink a call to let him know you applaud the actions of Cody, Tom, and Hannah, and that you support the reasons they did so. His phone number is 307-344-2002. That's 307-344-2002. And Wisconsin war on wildlife. Animal cruelty charges have been filed against a Wisconsin hunter. Hunting with hounds in Wisconsin is a year-round sport for many of the hunters. Wolf Patrol has featured, and not only for coyotes. While it is common and legal to hunt black bear, bobcat, coyotes, foxes, raccoons, and rabbits with multiple dogs, some Wisconsin hunters approach the sport in a very different way, a very illegal way, using bull terriers and Potterdales to not just pursue the wildlife, but to capture and kill it as well. We feature the videos and photos of two such hunters, Jason Armbruster of Amory, Wisconsin, and Steve Ritter of Rockford, Illinois. In Illinois, it is legal to hunt for hunting dogs to dispatch or kill legal prey like raccoons or opossums, while in Wisconsin, it is not legal for dogs to kill their prey. Armbruster is a Wisconsin resident who was reported to Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources after he posted photos on his Facebook page of three of his dogs mauling live raccoons. Wolf Patrol called the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources violation hotline on March 10th because Armbruster was looking for homes for three of his hunting dogs that had been trained to kill raccoons and possibly other wildlife. On March 15th, Wolf Patrol was informed by WDNR Chief Warden Todd Schaller that animal cruelty charges were pending in Polk County against Jason Armbruster and that the criminal investigation into his hunting and training with dogs was now being handled by the Polk County District Attorney's Office. Armbruster was charged on March 13 with 10 counts of mistreatment of animals, cause of death, and for instigation of animal fights, all Class 1 felonies. Armbruster has an initial court appearance scheduled for April 16th for the charges which stem from incidents that occurred in May and October of 2017 when many of the photos on his Facebook page were first published. And the world's first wilderness area is under attack. The United States Air Force is proposing up to 10,000 F-16 fighter jet sorties a year over the Gila and Aldo Leopold wildernesses and the Gila National Forest in southern New Mexico. The area's wild character would no doubt be harmed by the invasion and noise of these countless military overflights, including those just 100 feet above the ground, and the flares and chaff that they will drop. Although Leopold is turning over in his grave, his visionary proposal for a wilderness area in New Mexico's Gila National Forest came to fruition in 1924, when the Forest Service administratively designated it the world's first wilderness area, the Gila Wilderness, 4 decades before the Wilderness Act designated the area by statute. Leopold could not have known that this beautiful, rugged land meant to be protected in perpetuity would be under attack almost a century later. Holloman Air Force Base in Alamogordo, New Mexico, is proposing to expand its military training airspace over the Gila and Aldo Leopold wilderness areas, the Gila National Forest, and surrounding rural communities. It is planning 10,000 F-16 fighter jet overflights per year, with 10% to be flown at night, 10% to be supersonic, which means there will be loud sonic booms on the ground, an unspecified number at very low levels, down to just 100 feet above the ground. Holloman's proposed action, including dropping flares and chaff designed to create an electronic cloud to prevent radar detection. Flares allegedly burn out far above ground level, but there are documented cases of them being mistakenly released at low altitudes, reaching the ground and igniting fires. On July 11th of 2017, 7 wildfires were ignited on state and federal lands in southeastern Oregon. State and federal agencies are investigating whether those fires were caused by a military training exercise conducted that day. Concern about wildfires runs high in communities adjacent to the Gila National Forest, where a 2013 Whitewater Baldy fire, the largest wildfire in the state's history, burned almost 300,000 acres. Add drought and climate change to a long-lived burning flare, and you have the perfect recipe for a conflagration. Chaff bundles contain up to 5 million aluminum-coated glass fibers up to 2 inches long, designed to stay airborne as long as possible and to settle to the earth after several hours. Military studies on the effects of chaff on wildlife, humans, and water quality leave many questions unanswered. For example, does inhaled or ingested chaff impair wildlife and livestock health? When chaff lands in rivers and streams, does it affect aquatic life and water quality? Numerous studies document that aircraft noise, especially from supersonic flights, has serious health impacts on humans and wildlife alike. Many hikers have experienced military aircraft that seem to come from out of nowhere, causing one to reflexively hit the deck in self-defense. When our heart rates settle down, we recognize that we are not under attack, but animals have no such realization, and many experience increased stress, and as a result, decreased feeding and breeding success. And Wyoming has proposed a cruel grizzly bear hunt in this press release from the Center for Biological Diversity. The hunt is allowed by Trump administration's premature removal of endangered species protection. Less than a year after Yellowstone's famed grizzly bears were stripped of Endangered Species Act protection, Wyoming today proposed hunting of the bears beginning this fall. Under the regulations, the state will sell tags for 24 grizzlies in areas outside of Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks. Wyoming's reckless hunt ignores the fact that grizzly bears remain endangered in Yellowstone and across the West, said Andrea Santarciere, a senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. It's tragic that these imperiled animals will be shot and killed so trophy hunters can stick their heads on their walls and their pelt on their floors. Although grizzly bear numbers in the greater Yellowstone area increased with endangered species protections granted in 1975, the bears continue to be threatened by isolation from other grizzly populations, loss of key food sources, and human-caused mortalities, which now include hunting. Overall, grizzly bears occupy less than 4% of their historic U.S. range. Yellowstone's amazing grizzly bears are loved by people around the world, and they deserve a real shot at survival, not a shot at their side, said Santarciere. It's horrific that Wyoming doesn't see the intrinsic value of these bears bringing to this state's landscape. And Earth's tiniest porpoise approaches extinction. As few as 12 vaquitas may be left on Earth, down from 100 in 2014 and only 30 in 2017. The vaquita is rapidly vanishing. Its population has fallen by 92% since the late 1990s, leading scientists to warn it could be extinct as early as 2018. The roughly 100 vaquitas that existed in 2014 are down to just 60 in 2016, and scientists announced last year that only about 30 vaquitas are left on the planet. In early 2018, conservationist Andrea Crosta told Monga Bay the species' total population may have fallen as low as 12 individual vaquitas. Roughly 4 feet long and weighing 90 pounds, vaquitas are already the planet's smallest marine mammals. Vaquita means little cow in Spanish, and now they're also the most endangered. This species is yet another victim of poaching and international wildlife trafficking, but with an odd twist, no one is actually trying to kill it. Unlike sharks, rhinos, and many other animals slaughtered by humans, vaquitas have no black market value. Unknown to science until 1958, the species was probably never abundant, living only in a corner of the northern Gulf of California. But the shy porpoises began showing up in shrimp nets in recent decades, not unlike the way dolphins were once plagued by tuna fishing. While conservationists push for shrimpers to adopt vaquita-friendly gear, the threat is now being eclipsed by something even worse. We could have dealt with shrimping, says Zach Smith, staff attorney for the Marine Mammal Protection Project at the Natural Resources Defense Council. There are thousands of people in that area who depend on the shrimp, but there are options for that. There is vaquita-friendly gear they could be using, but when the totoaba issue came into it, that changed everything. The totoaba is a humble fish that poses no direct danger to vaquitas. The problem is that it does have black market value in China, where its swim bladder is believed to have medicinal properties. That has led to intensive totoaba fishing in the Gulf of California, also known as the Sea of Cortez, even after Mexico protected the endangered fish in the 1970s. And since poachers hunt the totoaba with huge gill nets, the same kind of indiscriminate netting traditionally used by local shrimpers, they inevitably catch vaquitas too. While most shrimpers are just trying to make a living, the high price of totoaba has almost lured Mexico's notorious drug cartels into the mix. Totoaba swim bladders can sell for up to $10,000 per kilogram, about $5,000 a pound, making them more lucrative than marijuana. And if the Mexican government has struggled to convince ordinary anglers not to use gill nets, its hope of persuading cartel-backed poachers are faint. There's real money to be made here, and these organizations are well-established and use force when they have to, Smith told MNN. You just can't go up and ask them nicely not to use gill nets. And a predator is unlikely ally for declining red squirrels in this story from the Mother Nature Network. Red squirrels are native to Europe and abundant throughout most of its habitat, but in Great Britain, Ireland, and Italy, numbers have fallen dramatically due to the introduction of gray squirrels from North America. There are thought to be fewer than 250,000 individuals left in the United Kingdom, and most of those are in Scotland. The gray squirrel outcompetes the red squirrel in feeding since it can digest acorns, but red squirrels cannot, and it also carries disease called squirrel parapox virus, which kills red squirrels but doesn't seem to affect the gray ones. In many areas, the only solution to help bring back red squirrels is for humans to eradicate gray squirrels, but research has shown that perhaps the solution lies in protecting a long-persecuted predator. After years of being poisoned by game keepers, trapping, and habitat fragmentation, the pine marten disappeared from as much of England and Ireland and was only still common in northwestern Scotland. However, through protections and the reforesting of some areas, pine martens have begun to spread back into some of their historical habitat. And alongside this redistribution, researchers noticed something else was interesting. Where the range of pine martens overlaps with the range of gray squirrel numbers drop and leave room for native red squirrels to rebound. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can listen for a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon. That's Friday at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You could also listen to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 a.m., Coming up, KBOQ 97.9 in Bandon, Oregon, will be broadcasting Fridays at 10 a.m. KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m. WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill, Gilroy, California. KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California. KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California. And Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 in Berkeley, California. All broadcast the Earth First Update. Please check their schedules for day and time. Or you could always go to radio4all.net. That's radio4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous edition of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.